back when I was a kid, we would go on these long road trips, and my dad would hand me a road atlas and appoint me navigator. I took that job very seriously. Dad, meanwhile, knew exactly where he was going and really just wanted to keep me occupied. From time to time, he would say, "Where are we?" And I would dutifully figure it out and report back. South of Albany, or something like that. I'm convinced that this is the reason why I love maps. I love them. So does Jerry Gretzinger. We'll hear about what he did with his love of maps this week on the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. Jerry's map plus Michigan seeks more Michiganders. Our population is growing, but very slowly. We're going to hear from the state demographer about what the numbers show us. But first, a conversation about Juneteenth. The national holiday happens on Monday, June 19th, Juneteenth, and it marks the day in 1865 that enslaved people in Texas received news that they were free. The last in the country to get that news, which came 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation took effect. There's a celebration planned in Traverse City on Monday at Northwestern Michigan College, and I spoke with two of the organizers, Marshall Collins, who was on the Council of Northern Michigan E3, that group formed after the murder of George Floyd to combat and eliminate racism, and Marcus Bennett, Special Assistant to the President of NMC for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Juneteenth, we should say, became a federal holiday in 2021, and it is about to become an official Michigan holiday, too. But I was wondering, and I asked both of them, if they feel Juneteenth is getting the awareness it deserves. We spoke over Zoom. You'll hear Marcus Bennett's voice first.
It's getting more awareness. So a lot of people are aware of it. But now it's just a lot more things are happening in the forefront regarding Juneteenth. I can remember growing up, you hear bits and pieces about things. But now with the age of social media, you see a lot of things that are happening and taking place. I'll probably say probably in the last 4, 5, 6 years, a lot more things have been happening because it's kind of been this social media kind of boom of things that's taking place. Now I'm seeing other campuses, offices and things are doing things in honor of Juneteenth. So I would say is the movement is coming. It's not to where it needs to be, but in terms of awareness, it's going.
This is Marshall. And again, this is my 4th of July. You know, this is actually when Americans were freed. You know, we still live in some kind of systematic bondage, but this was it. So for me, Juneteenth is my freedom day.
What's the earliest memory you have of talking about or celebrating Juneteenth? Was it something either of you grew up with in your own families?
I can recall, I'm originally from North Carolina, but we would go to the beach in South Carolina. And we'd always go around that time, there would be a lot of celebration. Because when growing up in the South, they would kind of put this whole theme around Motorcycle Week. And so people would come across a lot of Blacks that had motorcycles would come down and kind of gather at Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So that was probably my earliest memory. And I want to say about 9 or 10. And that's something that we did for many years. But then it was kind of called like Bike Week. But then as you get older, you're just like, okay, wait a minute. Now this is a holiday and people are celebrating. And that was probably back in the late 80s. I'm kind of telling my age there a little bit, but that's when I kind of recall we would go down and celebrate that time.
Marshall, how about for you?
Mine is a little bit different because my parents were migrant workers. When we came up here in late May, we were in Northern Michigan area on June 19th. But I do remember hearing about celebrations, and I was like, I want to be a part of that. And I always missed it because I was up here. And then as I got older, well, mid-30s, I learned what Juneteenth was. But once again, that was through my own learning. I wasn't taught it in schools. I didn't know anything about it in schools. I went to Concordia College in Ann Arbor to become a social studies teacher. Not once was it mentioned in any of my history classes. At all, at a collegiate level.
Is it a bittersweet celebration? Because it is on one hand celebrating freedom. On the other hand, it's under this umbrella of all the problems that still exist and the fact that there wasn't freedom to begin with. So how do you feel it as a holiday?
We know where we've been, but also sets a roadway and a pathway to where we want to go and where we want to be. You got to remember what happened in the past, reflect, but now how do you go forward in terms of your life and your kids and the things that you do? We got freedoms. But again, not in just in terms of, okay, now we got this, but now what can we do going forward? What is that next step? What is it going to look like for my kids growing up and then their kids?
And it is a celebration of joy.
Well, unity as well.
Yeah.
You guys coming together. So it's that unity piece. It's that reflection piece. But also it's that hope piece of now what can we do going forward as a people, as a society?
What do you hope people who attend take away?
I hope what's on their mind is they understand what the feeling of a Black joy is. There's been so much hardships historically, presently, and in my eyes, we still find a way to smile.
And what I'm hoping, this is Marcus here, that when people come, it's going to spark some conversation. It's going to spark some connections. It's going to spark those relationships.
That's Marshall Collins and Marcus Bennett talking about Juneteenth, which will be celebrated Monday. We're about to meet Jerry Gretzinger. He grew up in Grand Rapids, worked in fashion in New York with his wife Meg Staley, and is now back in northern Michigan. For decades, Jerry has been working on a map. IPR's Dan Wanchura spoke with arts and culture commentator Joe Beyer, and we will let them tell you the rest. Here's Joe.
I've known him for a while now and had a chance to talk to him at the Denos when they were installing the new exhibit, which is always cool and special.
Yeah.
And here's how Jerry remembers the beginnings of it.
It started with somebody giving my dad a stack of old National Geographic maps. And I loved those. And to me, it was a way of traveling the world in my own house, my own home, growing up as a kid. And I was intrigued by place names and foreign cities and being places that I wasn't.
That all sounds super relatable, Joe. What happens next?
So he says he took that love of travel and maps into other little projects he was working on. So he was collecting travel memorabilia and playing with it visually. And so over time, he started making panels, individual pieces of art that even he wasn't entirely clear about. But one day, one of his sons found the artwork in their attic and brought it back downstairs, became fascinated with it, asked, you know, their dad about it.
Uh-huh.
And from that moment, Jerry sort of gets a new spark with the project and he picks it up and takes it a little more seriously. He reformats these ideas and his style into what it becomes.
The simplest explanation has always been that it's a map of an imaginary place. But through the years, it's evolved into something more. It's become an abstract, the edges, if you look at the edges here in this room, they're very abstract. They don't look like a map at all. And turned it into a generative art project in that I use a set of revised playing cards to tell me what to do next, as though this was a computer algorithm and I'm the little machine spitting it out.
So what exactly does this look like?
Well, it's sort of mesmerizing, and over the course of the project, Jerry's actually created over 4,000 of these individual 8x10 panels, and the panels come together to create the larger version of the map. So you're often standing in front of something very, very enticing, but you're not 100% sure what you're looking at. So you have to lean in and look at the details. You have to kind of step back and look at the whole thing, but it's very overwhelming in scope and scale and really gives you a sense that you're diving into a different world.
And is he painting this map?
He is. He uses an entirely mixed media approach. So there's found objects, there's a kind of love of topography and language. And then he's also using painting physically to bring all of the elements together. So it's a little bit hard to explain, but once you're there, I think you'll understand it.
Joe, I gotta say, I'm fascinated by all of this. So there's a new exhibit at the Denos. What should we know about that?
Yeah, well, go check it out along with all the amazing art you can experience there. But on June 15th, there's going to be an extra special artist opening with Jerry, and he's going to have a deeper conversation about this project with the director of the museum, Craig Hadley, and his life and work. So I'm guessing that will be awesome.
Yeah, well.
And the exhibit, you just can't miss it. It takes over the entire lobby of the museum. The installation is over 17 feet tall, probably 30 to 40 feet wide on two separate walls. So it's very interesting how many different ways this exhibit has been shown. It's been shown vertically, horizontally. There was even an installation on a super scale where some of Jerry's tiles were laid out on the floor with a custom catwalk that the audience could walk around and view it from above. So each and every time, it's a unique installation, and you'll never see it that way again.
That's incredible.
And, you know, it sort of struck me after you see how many impressive places it's been shown, Edinburgh, Paris, Masmocha. You know, many of Jerry's dreams came true, and his work has been carried around the world from Grand Rapids, where he grew up, to all of these different places.
Wow. Joe, you mentioned he even has an internet fan base that carries the work even further. Who knows where it'll go next, I guess, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting. He does have a legitimate internet following on Reddit, and people have become fascinated with the project, and then they've also sort of been inspired by it and taken it into creating their own imaginary worlds. But on subreddits, there's actually a verb now called Jerry mapping as a way to explore your own creative cartography. So he's really had an impact.
This is like fan fiction almost, like people using starting points like Minecraft or Dungeons and Dragons to go further.
Exactly. And much the same way that there are deep cuts now in music, I would say that this is a real deep cut art project.
Joe, I guess the last question I have would be...
Oh, yeah. I read your mind, Dan.
After 60 years of working on this project, will there ever be an end to Jerry's map?
No. Well, maybe. It depends on how long I can carry on. But so far, I'm doing okay. I would guess that I'm good for another maybe 5 or 7 or maybe 10 years. We'll see. Thank you. I'll let you know when it's done.
Jerry Gretzinger. His map is on display now at the Denos Museum in Traverse City. That piece came to us from IPR's Dan Wanshura and arts and culture commentator Joe Beyer. The Up North Lowdown returns in a moment.
Ever wonder what the big deal is with classical music, but just don't have the time to check it out? I'm Matthew Schlummer, artistic director for IPR's Soundgarden Project, and I've got great news for Northern Michigan. Thanks to Interlochen Public Radio and Golden Fowler Home Furnishings, the Soundgarden Project is back for its third season of planting music in unexpected places. We might show up at your local hardware store, your hair salon, maybe even your dentist. We'll pop up anywhere you might have downtime and give you a free sampling of live music by world-class musicians. Sound interesting? Check out our website to see when we might plant music at your local hangout spots. Soundgardenproject.org.
Welcome back to the Up North Lowdown. I'm Ed Ronco. We need more Michiganders. That's according to Governor Gretchen Whitmer and other state officials. The governor formed a committee recently seeking to find ways to increase Michigan's population. There are slightly more than 10 million of us, according to 2021 data. And one of the people charged with studying that data, with making sense of all of it, is the state demographer. Her name is Jacqueline Butler, and she works with the Michigan Center for Data and Analytics, a state agency.
Michigan, you know, has experienced 50 years of net out-migration, losing more people than what it gains. However, throughout almost this entire time period, it's continued to experience population growth.
With just the exception of the Great Recession around 2008 or so. But she's saying more people are moving away from the state than moving into it, and yet our population is still growing. So how is that possible? Natural growth, she says. People are being born here, but even that is slowing. Butler spoke with IPR's Michael Livingston, and he asked her about that new committee to make more people into Michiganders. How should they use data to help their work?
What you would want to study is looking at people who have moved into or out of the state, breaking it down by age group, looking at the young adult age group, and see if there's any differences in their reason for moving to and from, you know, the state of Michigan compared to other age groups. So that's what I would start to do to try to get an answer to that question. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Why is it important for people to pay attention to these numbers? How can we demystify some of these myths about labor, birth rate, deaths, and migration when we study this?
It's a fantastic question. I do not have an answer right now.
How would I ask it like this? Why do you do your job?
Working as the state demographer is a fantastic opportunity both for me to learn more about the people and places within the state of Michigan and that historical narrative, and also just one of my favorite parts of the job is getting out to communities and meeting and talking to people and sharing information and uncovering insights that I hope that they can use to make informed decisions about what to do moving forward. And in the process, I am learning all the time. I learn every day on my job.
A few moments with Michigan's state demographer, Jacqueline Butler. Let's find out what else is news this week. Beta Bus, the transit service for Grand Traverse and parts of Leelanau County, is expanding service this summer. Later hours, more on-demand routes, and real-time bus tracking technology are just some of the changes. Ridership is slowly recovering from its pre-pandemic record of more than 500,000. Beta estimates it will see about 400,000 riders this year. The Michigan legislature has sent the governor some bills intended as a response to sexual abuse committed by former MSU Athletics Dr. Larry Nassar. He was sentenced for his crimes in 2017 and 2018. Under the measures headed to the governor, a doctor who engages in sexual conduct under the pretext of medical treatment will lose their license. People who live in Gaylord will see a tax cut this year, a slight reduction in a millage rate, in part because of marijuana. The city brought in about $311,000 from the state's excise tax on marijuana. It's about $100,000 more than they expected. It is now illegal in Michigan to discriminate against someone because of their natural hair texture and styles associated with it. Think locks, braids, twists. That's because Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed a new law this week adding protections for traits associated with race into Michigan's Civil Rights Code. She says this law is important both for the people who have endured discrimination and for Michigan as a whole. That's it for the Up North Lowdown this week. I'm Ed Ronco. Our producer is Max Copeland. Music comes from Blue Dot Sessions, and we had help in this episode from Dan Wanchura, Joe Beyer, and Michael Livingston. We make this podcast at Interlochen Public Radio. This week, we're going to leave you with a little music, part of a new single from composer and singer-songwriter Tony Manfredonia. He's originally from Philadelphia, but 8 years ago, he moved to Petoskey and was captivated. He calls it, quote, one of the best decisions I've ever made. So he did what singer-songwriters do. He wrote a song about it. It is called, appropriately, Petoskey. And he's joined on this recording by Northern Michigan's Boundary Water Trio, as well as an ad hoc choir of Petoskey-based singers. We have a story about it up at interlochenpublicradio.org.
There's a little town awaiting up in Little Traverse Bay, where the shimmering sapphire takes the pain away. Hear the seagulls sound when all the fish go round, sparkling beneath the waves. Oh, the sun it shines in such a beautiful sight, laughter echoes through the summer nights. Petoskey brings out the best in life, where the sun sets on horizons glow, where the people make us feel at home. I was city grown, now living on country roads, where an eagle soars to say hello. The cricket sound when the moon shines down and the Milky Way comes out to play. Oh, the Milky Way comes out to play. Let's go! See the clouds, they ride over the windy tide. Laughter echoes through the summer nights. Oh, Tusky brings out the best in life, where the sun sets on horizons gold, where the people make us feel at home. Snowy showers, see the winter change into spring. Old Petoskey's got just about everything, where the sun sets on horizons glow, where the people make us feel at home. Where the sun sets on horizons glow, where the people make us feel at home.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk next week.